Thank you, Amelia. You know, I'm happy to tell my story here in this park. It won't be as scandalous as yours, but I love this park. I mean, the eyes are just beautiful, and look at that fountain. Both monumental and yet childlike. And all these great shade trees. Yeah, I feel at home here. Now, my story is excerpted from a little-known series of graphic novels, the author of which is anonymous, about the adventures of Bruno and Buffle Malco, a pair of artists, tricksters, buffoons, and social activists. They were known in the working poor neighborhood in which they resided as the Dogs. Bruno was small and thin as a whippet, and bald with a shiny crown. Buffle Malco was large, hairy, a little jowly, with slabs of muscle, a mastiff. They lived together, worked together, roamed the streets together, and slept together, wrapped and curled. They had even been known on occasion to sniff each other's underparts.
Disgusting.
It is not disgusting. It's perfectly natural. They were partners in sex and love, art, money, and mischief. They loved to eat and drink at the best restaurants and to hold parties and fetes for their friends and neighbors. So they were always grubbing and scrambling for money. Therefore, they also hired out as house painters, plasterers, and woodworkers. They were the Dogs. Then one day into their dog's life came Simon DeVille. Simon DeVille was the sole progeny of Samson DeVille, an industrialist and real estate magnate. Simon was a doughy, peevish child who grew into a doughy, peevish young man. His titanic father did his best to tolerate his son and keep him afloat. It so happened that in a small industrial city upriver, Samson owned a great deal of riverfront property, a neighborhood occupied by the working poor. He planned to evict the residents, demolish the buildings, and develop the riverfront for marinas and nightclubs and luxury hotels. He reasoned that Simon's persistent peevishness would serve him well in the eviction and destruction phase of the project, so he gave his son a pile of money and sent him upriver to manage it. Ugh. You notice that these stone benches here, they're really smooth and they're under these trees, so they do attract bird droppings. You might want to be aware of where you're sitting. So Simon went upriver and went to work for his father. He bought a fine old house that needed some slight renovation and improvement, and who, at the recommendation of a company foreman who took an instant dislike to Simon, should he hire for all his painting, plastering, and woodworking needs but Bruno and Buffle Malco, whose neighborhood it was, you might have guessed, that Simon planned to demolish after evicting their friends, families, and selves. Bruno and Buffle Malco descended on Simon's house like the storm of weird industry and energy that they were. They laughed and bickered, told stories and sang songs, ate large lunches, and worked as smoothly together as longtime tango partners. They were diligent and skilled and worked quickly, taking few breaks. Simon found himself drawn to the pair. Their vitality worried and disgusted him a little, but for the most part, he felt oddly compelled by them. He took to hovering around them and making conversation. If he had been honest with himself, which he never was, he'd have realized that he wanted them to like and admire him. He actually thought that they should. One afternoon, Bruno and Buffle Malco were installing molding in what was to be Simon's study. Simon wandered in with teacup and saucer to watch them. He'd spent the morning in frustrating meetings with city officials. He watched the work in silence for a few minutes, slurping at his tea. Then Buffle Malco excused himself, saying he had to use the facilities, and left the room. "You seem glum, Mr. Simon," said Bruno. "If you don't mind the inquiry, what gives?"
"You may just call me Simon," said Simon. "And yes, I am glum."
"I'm sorry to hear that," said Bruno. "What gives?" Simon proceeded to complain about his frustrating transactions with the hierarchy of petty corruption among municipal officials.
"I don't understand them," he said. "I suppose it's that they're terribly provincial. Delaying the project only postpones the thick linings of their pockets."
"What, if I may ask, O Simon, dear Simon, is the project to which you refer?" inquired Bruno, brightly. Simon then told Bruno all about it. Bruno realized quickly what he was hearing. He withdrew a gigantic red handkerchief from the pocket of his trousers and with it mopped his shiny crown. That evening, Bruno and Buffalo Malco were eating large meatball sandwiches and drinking red wine. Bruno related to Buffalo Malco all that Simon had told him. They agreed that Simon must be stopped, or at least immediately slowed down. "It's as if he can't even imagine the people here, our friends and neighbors," said Bruno, "or the homes in which they lay their heads at night and take refuge from the shit-heeled world."
"Now move," he said.
He actually shrugged and sipped his tea.
"What an asshole," said Buffalo Malco. "He needs to be thwarted at every turn and have his doughy face rubbed in it."
They then devised one of their trademark dazzling plans. "A work of art," said Bruno. They washed up, went to bed, had fair to middling sex, then lay together looking up through the skylight above their bed at the plumes of fog bumping on the window glass. Then they slept the sleep of the just. The next afternoon, Bruno and Buffalo Malco were putting up doorframe molding over the tall doorway when Simon entered with his teacup and saucer, passing under the ladder and into the room. Buffalo Malco once more excused himself to use the facilities.
"Doesn't he like me?" asked Simon a trifle peevishly.
"He adores you," said Bruno from atop the ladder. "He's probably your primary admirer in this city. But he has an odd body, not to mention an eccentric metabolism. One whiff of tea fumes, and he has to piss."
"That is odd," said Simon, "but I get it. I have to piss a lot, too."
"Any progress today, Simon Agonistes, against your municipal frustrations?" asked Bruno, coming jauntily sideways down the ladder.
"None," said Simon. "I might just start steamrolling the buildings without a permit. See if they can stop me."
"Don't do that, don't do that," said Bruno, hopping down the last couple of rungs. "I may have a solution to your dilemma, dear Simon. Buffalo Malco and I were discussing it in hushed tones last night, and we agreed. You're new to our paltry city, so you don't know. You're not talking to the real powers, the powers that really be and therefore get things done."
"How can I meet these powers?" said Simon. "I have to meet them. I deserve to meet them. I am doing important work on their behalf, and they should know it. They must see that my proper place is among them."
"It's not easy," said Bruno, leaning on the ladder. "If it was easy, anyone could do it. And you're not anyone. You know the old saying that the history of any city is the history of that city's secret societies."
Of course I know that saying," said Simon.
"Then you know that the powers that be are that secret society. The real doers are the hidden," said Bruno, in a stage whisper. The feet of the ladder began to slide on the smooth floor, so Bruno let go of the ladder and stood up straight. "In order to expedite your development, you need to be introduced and initiated to the society. Buffalo Malco and I, because we're your admirers, want to arrange your introduction."
"You two? But you're rough workmen," protested Simon. "And you're artists. How can you..."
"What did you not understand when I said the real doers are the hidden?" boomed Bruno, and sprang to beside Simon, who was startled, and flipped his teacup into the air. Bruno caught the cup and replaced it on the saucer. "Simon Magus, we are the guides and the gatekeepers." Bruno backed away from Simon, all the while eyeing him up and down. "I wonder if you could bear the initiation, our admiree. What are your feelings about sex and death magic?"
"What? Sex and death magic?" asked Simon, cup rattling on saucer.
"The magic that brings the greatest lovers in history back from beyond the grave to ecstatically and agonizingly initiate you to the mysteries of true power," said Bruno. "For me, it was the Virgin Queen, Elizabeth I. Some virgin. I made like the Spanish Armada and sank into the English Channel. As for Buffalo Malco, Cleopatra herself. Insert your asp joke here."
"You're saying the initiation is you had sex with long-dead queens?" said Simon, his voice hitting a highish pitch.
"It's pretty freaky," said Bruno, "but it's amazing. And it opens the way to secret power, which opens the doors to everything in the city. You can get away with anything."
"That's appealing," said Simon.
"If you can withstand the initiation," said Bruno. "That is to say, the greatest lay of your life."
"I think I can," said Simon.
"Then we'll arrange for it tomorrow night. We'll confirm it when we meet tomorrow," said Bruno. The next afternoon, Bruno and Buffalo Malco were on two ladders, carving decorative flourishes into the lintel.
Simon came in with his tea, walking under both ladders. Buffalo Malco climbed down and excused himself.
"Did you make any headway today?" asked Bruno, climbing down at once. "Are you willing for tonight?"
"No, I didn't," said Simon. He slurped and gulped some tea. "Yes, I am."
"These are your instructions," said Bruno, drawing closer and speaking in just above a whisper. "Wear a light-colored suit. Go to the city cemetery just before midnight. Climb onto the roof of the first mausoleum to the left. Wait there. A man will arrive for you within half an hour. He'll be wearing a bull's head and a long black robe and driving an anachronistic conveyance. Say nothing to him and show no fear. Just get into the conveyance and he'll take you where you need to go. Now leave me. We must speak no more today."
Simon, feeling slightly shaky, left the study. He went to his bathroom in the master suite. He shaved carefully and put on a touch of cologne. Then he went to his dressing room, put on his school tie and a light-colored suit. Then he sat down and waited. At 11:45, he left the house and made his somewhat unsteady way to the cemetery. He climbed with difficulty onto the roof of the first mausoleum on the left, and he waited. After a while, there appeared a motorcycle with a sidecar, piloted by a large man wearing a long black robe and a goat's head with curling horns.
"Get in,"
said the man in a chilly voice. He looked not at Simon, but straight ahead. Simon hesitated, but then he thought,
No, it's all right, it's all right."
He slid painfully off the roof and clambered into the sidecar. The man with the goat's head drove the motorcycle directly to the riverfront neighborhood that Simon was planning to demolish. The motorcycle stopped in the center of a small square, rather dimly lit.
"Get out,"
said the man in the goat's head, looking straight ahead. Simon clambered out of the sidecar, and the motorcycle sped away. Simon stood for a moment in the center of the square. Then, something hit him in the left shoulder and fell to the cobbles. Simon looked down. A rotten cabbage.
"Evict us from our homes, will ye?"
came a voice from out of the darkness. Simon was hit in the back, something heavy and warm. Simon turned. Horse flops. Then another cabbage. Then more cabbages.
"Demolish our neighborhood, will ye? Ye bastard,"
came another voice. Then, dog dirt? Cabbages and other rotten vegetables. More horse flops. More voices shouting many things, angrily, some of them obscenities. Simon tried to run, but he slipped on the slick cobbles and fell. And then there was a tremendous hail of rotten vegetables, mostly cabbages, and all manner of feces, pelting him and keeping him face down on the disgusting slick cobbles, with voices raging from all around him for many long minutes. Then finally it was quiet, and the foul hail stopped. Simon lay still for a little while longer, then picked himself up and shuffled numbly back to his house. His light-colored suit was ruined. He washed himself 3 times, thoroughly, but he could still smell himself. He shuffled to the unfinished study and fell asleep in a chair. The next morning, Bruno and Buffalo Malco burst in bright and early.
"It smells like shit in here," said Bruno.
"And rotten vegetables," said Buffalo Malco.
He sniffed.
"Mostly cabbages."
"What happened last night?" asked Bruno. "Oh, Simon of the desert. The powers are unhappy." Simon told them what had befallen him the night before.
"A goat's head," said Bruno.
"The enemy."
"There's an enemy," said Simon.
"There's an enemy," said Buffalo Malco. "His sign, a goat's head. How did they know?"
"You got into a motorcycle, you fool," said Bruno, suddenly pacing around the room. "I said anachronistic, a phaeton. A buckboard! A chariot!" Simon hung his head, and his eyes emitted a small trickle of tears.
"I didn't know," he said. "I can't be blamed."
"The powers are unhappy," said Bruno, folding his arms across his chest. "The powers are disappointed."
"What's to be done?"
asked Simon, his voice perilously close to a peevish whine.
"What's to be done?"
And my friends, this is but the first issue of The Dogs. Will Simon peeve his way to recovery? Will the neighborhood be saved? And who is the man in the goat's head? Pompanea, yeah? I think you should go next.
Follow the cliffhanger then.
Let's go to Market Square.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Y'all with me?
Yeah.